The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
We got our first look at Justin Fields this weekend as the Bears' rookie camp got underway. Welcome to NFL Live, and alongside Mina Kimes, Marcus Spears, and Adam Schefter, I'm Field Yates. And ahead this hour, apparently Tom Brady spent last season learning a new language. That turned out pretty well for him. We'll explain, but let's start in Chicago. Well, the Bears made the boldest of moves of the first round of the 2021 NFL Draft, rising up from pick 20 to 11 in a trade with the Giants to send New York its 2022 first-round pick to select Ohio State's Justin Fields. Head coach Matt Nagy has made it clear Andy Dalton's status as the starter hasn't changed yet.
Andy is the starter. Andy's going to get the one reps. When you go up to draft a quarterback like Justin, everyone's very excited, and they want to know when. And trust me, we all understand that. But we need to make sure that whatever that plan is that we put together, that it's the best thing for the Chicago Bears.
Schefty, we'll start with you. It is May, after all, but is this coach speak from Matt Nagy, or did the Bears really plan to go to Andy Dalton to begin the season?
Phil, you remember what happened after the Bears signed Andy Dalton? The social media account tweeted out Andy Dalton, QB1. And they have held steadfast to the fact that Andy Dalton remains QB1. Now, again, you could almost roll the sound of most head coaches after they draft a quarterback in the first round. We're going to be patient. We're going to wait. We've got the other guy here. It seems like it's the same speech every year with different quarterback. And then what happens is the veteran comes in, struggles at one point or another. The fans get more hysterical for the rookie quarterback, for the first round pick. Nobody holds out patience. They turn to the rookie quarterback sooner than they want. It feels like that's what's unfolding here in Chicago, that Andy Dalton is QB1. They plan to open the season with their QB1 and Andy Dalton. And they would like to ride him as long as they can before turning it over to Justin Fields. But the question I would have is, how patient is the coaching staff and front office going to be? What's going to happen if Andy Dalton has a 3-interception game? Are they going to continue to say Andy Dalton is QB1? But going in, that's the plan.
Yeah, Adam is absolutely correct. We've seen this movie before. We've heard these exact quotes before. And every year, the same thing happens. The rookie first rounder does start. I can understand why the Bears might be a little bit apprehensive looking at their schedule and seeing week one, Rams, prime time. Like, they don't want to throw Justin Fields to the Wolves. And to be clear, by the Wolves, I mean Aaron Donald. But we don't know right now if he's ready. We won't know if he's ready until we see him in action in August. There are things, however, that Chicago can do to make it more likely that he's ready, which would, of course, be the best case scenario. This offense already has some aspects that I think Justin Fields will be comfortable with. Last year, a lot of play action out of wide zone, which is not dissimilar from what he did at Ohio State. We've talked about how we're hoping they'll mix in more RPOs, use his legs more, speed up his process. This is what the Bears have to spend all summer doing, optimizing their offense for Justin Fields so that they can get him out on the field as soon as possible.
So, Marcus, Mina just said the best-case scenario is that Justin Fields is starting in week one, which I agree with, by the way. Is this Bears defense good enough, though, to win with a rookie quarterback early?
I'm glad you agree, babyface, because Mina is always right sometimes. Listen, here's the thing, man. Yes, but the premium will be put on Justin Fields to take care of the football, which I think he will. He is not a high turnover guy, and I know – you will point to a couple games last year, i.e. Northwestern is the one that people seem to nitpick, but he's been really respectful of the football. And as a young rookie quarterback, one of the messages that Matt Nagy and his coaching staff needs to get across to Justin Fields is you do have support across the ball. I remember watching Tony Romo before he was starting, before Drew Bledsoe, when I was in Dallas. And we all knew at some point this would be Tony Romo's team because of what he was doing when the cameras weren't on. And we felt a little bit more confident about winning, a little bit more confident about being a defense that may give up a big play because this is the NFL, but you have a guy that can answer. And then not putting us in terrible situations. I look at Justin Fields not only from the ability to go into camp and earn his starting job, but also the athleticism element of his game is really going to stand out, especially when you're supported by this bunch of defense that they have in Chicago. That's why I'm along with you, Babyface and Mina Kimes, that it'll be week one.
Well, how about this? Marcus, the Bears are replacing their defensive coordinator, Chuck Pagano, retired, so they're going to have to make adjustments there. And when Mina's talking about the offense under Justin Fields, I guarantee you that's exactly what the Bears are doing. They're taking the plays that he felt most comfortable with at Ohio State,
yes,
and they're integrating, yes, them into their game plan for this upcoming summer and this upcoming season, so that if and when they have to turn to Justin Fields, he's running an offense a lot like the one he ran at Ohio State. That's what they're going to try to do. They're going to make it like he's back at school, back at home, comfortable, easy. They want to make this as basic and simple as possible. That's what coaches continually do for rookie quarterbacks until they can feed them more and more and get them more and more acclimated to the NFL game. So they're going to tailor it for Justin Fields, but again, they want Andy Dalton to be QB1.
Well, as we know with Justin Fields, he went to Ohio State after spending a year at Georgia, immediately won that job. We'll see if he can replicate that fate in Chicago. The Bears, by the way, don't pick in the first round again until 2023. Yeah. They're probably fine with it. A team that has a quarterback question mark looming over the organization is the Houston Texans, who held their rookie minicamp over the weekend, giving the team its first look at Davis Mills, the first selection ever made by new GM Nick Caserio. Now, questions abound surrounding their incumbent starter, Deshaun Watson, with head coach David Culley fielding questions about the quarterback currently in the midst of major legal proceedings.
We have nothing to say about that situation at this time. Kyle and ownership a few weeks back indicated about how our organization feels about the situation. I think when Nick was on not long ago, we mentioned that he also mentioned that the legal process is in effect right now, and we're gonna respect that and gonna go from there.
Shefty, as you might expect, David Culley largely tight-lipped there. What's the latest with Watson and the Texans as things presently stand?
Well, you'd have to listen to all of his comments, Field, but it certainly seemed like there was a little bit of a shift in tone into the way the Texans spoke about Deshaun Watson now compared to the way that they spoke about him earlier this offseason before some of these civil lawsuits unfolded. And back then, it seemed to be like, Deshaun Watson is our quarterback, and we believe that he's not going anywhere. And again, I don't know that question at that moment, but it certainly didn't sound that way. Now it's no comment. Now they don't want to speak about it. And now they want to see how this whole legal process plays itself out and lean on comments that previously have been made by the owner of the team, Cal McNair. And so it did seem like a little bit of a shift. But I think the more you look at it, you have to remember that the offseason opened with Deshaun Watson telling the Texans, trade me. I don't want to be in Houston anymore. He was the original pioneer quarterback before we got to Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers this offseason. And so that was Deshaun Watson early on. Then the unfortunate, unsettling legal situation came up, and that shifted the tone as it should have all along. So we don't know what's going to happen, but it certainly seems like his future in Houston is cloudy, murky, uncertain at best.
Yeah, it felt like Deshaun Watson's unhappiness in Houston was one of the first major storylines of the offseason. It sounds like Deshaun Watson's future could well be the storyline that remains of the offseason.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right, we're back with Adam Schefter and back with some more news and notes. Schefty, let's begin with a historic hire in Denver.
Yeah. Yeah, Phil, that's absolutely right. The Denver Broncos made a little bit of history today hiring Kelly Klein as the executive director of football operations and a special advisor to the general manager. She used to work at George Payton with the Vikings. She was scouting duties, managed several departments, and she's thought to be the highest-ranking female scouting executive ever with an NFL team. Good for Kelly Klein. And Juwan James, as Jeremy Fowler reported over the weekend, is thinking about filing a grievance to try to recoup some of the money that is at stake with him suffering that season-ending a torn Achilles, $10 million, while he was working out away from the Denver Broncos complex. This is an issue that doesn't look like it'll go away anytime soon. And the Washington sack leader, Ryan Kerrigan, decided to stay in the division today and sign with the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, he did speak with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He did talk with the Cincinnati Bengals, but in the end, opted to sign with Philadelphia. He's not been a full-time pass rusher, being used more in a situational role, but Philadelphia is looking to use a situation where Ryan Kerrigan could have some success, especially against his former team field.
Free agency never sleeps, Shefty, just like you. And let's stay right here in the NFC East. And it's year two of the Joe Judge era in New York, and he brought in pass catchers Kenny Golladay and Kyle Rudolph in free agency, along with former Titans cornerback Adoree Jackson. And to the surprise of all of us, Dave Gettleman traded back in the draft, landing Florida receiver Kadarius Toney with the 20th pick and then edge rusher Azeez Ojulari in the second round out of Georgia. But perhaps the greatest addition of all could be the return of Saquon Barkley, who ranked third in scrimmage yards from 2018 to 2019, trailing only Christian McCaffrey and Ezekiel Elliott. All right, so Mina and Marcus are back. And Mina, are you buying the Giants taking that next step this season?
I am buying the notion that the Giants are one of the most fascinating teams in football. Marcus is laughing because I'm sighing, because he knows when I'm sighing, it means I'm not ready to be entirely positive about something. But that said, like, the NFC East is fascinating, Phil, because the Cowboys obviously have the best offense. The Washington football team obviously has the best defense. But the Giants could be, emphasis on could, the most balanced team in the division. I love what the defense did last year under Patrick Graham. They have one of the better secondaries in the NFL now with some of the additions there. Love the Ojulari draft pick. And the other side of the football, they added a ton of playmakers. But none of that will matter if Daniel Jones can't take care of the football. And their entire season, whether or not they can overtake Dallas or Washington, hinges on that very question. And it's not on all of Daniel Jones' shoulders, by the way. The Giants did not make improvements along that offensive line that struggled a lot last year. And I question that strategy. I love all the additions. I love the draft. But to me, this comes down to Daniel Jones and that offensive line.
And that's on period. And I'm going to believe it when I see it with Daniel Jones. Because listen, he is what's holding this team back. And it's the turnovers. Mina, this defense is good. You don't have to sigh on that. This defense is a good defense. We saw them down the stretch stop some really good offenses, and we saw actually this team take on the mentality of Joe Judge. Let me say this. I was so impressed by the response from the New York Giants to Joe Judge. When he first came into training camp, I'm taking us all the way back, I was like, oh, is this gonna work? He had guys running because they made a mistake or dropped the football. When you hear the New York Giants players talk about Joe Judge, they talk about him in high regard. That's step one. Now, can your quarterback take care of the football? The most hurtful thing to a team that has a chance to win, it's the turnovers and the turnover battles. Mina has all the numbers for y'all. But I know the percentages that increase when you turn the football over, which sways games into the other team's favor, is sometimes insurmountable. And Daniel Jones has been that. I will believe it when I see it, and that's my only pause about the New York Giants potentially winning the East.
Yeah, they're a really interesting team. And not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but if Daniel Jones struggles again in year three, which is often one of those inflection points of a quarterback's career, with that fifth-year option needing to be exercised after it, the Giants now have an extra first-round pick next year as a result of that draft day trade with the Bears. So, Mina, we've been talking about if Daniel Jones makes this leap in some sort. I don't think there's evidence that he will be making that leap, because it's been an inconsistent start to his season. So what's the root of belief if you think there are people in the camp that will make a big jump this year?
It comes down to exactly what Marcus said, because here's the thing, Phil. Daniel Jones has been better in this league than I expected coming out of Duke. He's been accurate. I think his athleticism has really surprised a lot of people. But to use Marcus's language from earlier in the show, he doesn't respect the football. In fact, he doesn't even, you know, call it sir. I mean, so if he can't cut down on those turnovers this year, I think the Giants are going to be faced with a difficult decision after year three.
Yeah, especially with all those quarterbacks.
And that's
go ahead, Swagoo.
And that's the conundrum, babyface. Like, you see the talent with Daniel Jones. You see the athleticism. You see the ability to place the football. Just too inconsistent. And the problem has been the Daniel Jones has costed the New York Giants wins. That is the problem in some of those important moments. If he can fix that, dude, this team will be dangerous for anybody.
He has so much on his shoulders this year with a great opportunity for the Giants to thrive. But what would help him this year, or will help him, is the addition of Kadarius Toney. And check this out. Toney, their first-round pick out of Florida, as we mentioned, says a wrong-sized cleat caused him to tweak his right foot. So to compensate for that, he briefly ran barefooted routes to get his reps in. Swagoo, have you ever seen this happen? One cleat only on the field?
I've seen it happen by accident, Phil, but the most impressive thing was I saw Jason Witten run 50 yards with no helmet. Until Kadarius Toney do that, I don't care about the 1 foot being free of a shoe.
He looks like one of those, like, 1960s kickers who kick with his toe and only wore one cleat. But it is 2021, and wide receivers are probably
you're
best suited to
barefooted.
Be wearing. That's right. Yeah, probably better to wear two cleats, if you ask me.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We officially know the schedules for all 32 teams, which, of course, includes the four that made it to conference championship weekend last year. Let's get to some quick reads. Mina, where did the Chiefs take their first loss of the season?
All right, don't yell at me, Chiefs fans. I still had your team winning the conference, but I'm going to have the Ravens beating them in week two just because I think Baltimore is going to improve on offense, and I think, frankly, they're tired of losing to Kansas City.
And I think the Buffalo Bills could take their first loss in week two at Miami. And I say that because I think back to what Rex Ryan always said. He said that playing in Miami was the most difficult place, the most difficult stadium in the NFL to play. Buffalo has to go there in the second week of the season. It's going to be nice and toasty in Miami at that point of the year. It's going to be a very tough game for the Buffalo Bills to win in week two.
Well, Packers' first loss is week one, and I'm not even going to talk about the elephant in the room because if Aaron Rodgers ain't there, they're going to have a lot of more losses outside of week one. But the Saints should be really good. I believe Sean Payton has something cooking with Jameis Winston, y'all. And don't count this team out. I know Tampa's is the darling of the NFC South right now, but the New Orleans Saints is still a really good football team. Week one for the Green Bay Packers.
Interesting stuff there. And for the Brady-led Bucs, I'm going to go with week three, which, interestingly, against the Los Angeles Rams on the road, is one of the very few, if not the only game that the Bucs look to be underdogs going into this season. The initial line, and we're still in May, after all. The Rams are favored by 1 point. I don't think losses are going to come frequently for the Bucs. Maybe one does take place, though, as early as week three. All right, more on Brady and company. We know how the season ended, but how did they get there? Brady says learning the new offense was like learning a new language, literally.
Midway through the year, I was still trying to figure out how to call plays. I would just read them off my wristband and try to visualize what was going to happen. But it's like learning a completely new language. You've spoken English for 20 years. Now all of a sudden someone's like, hey, man, let's go. Let's speak some Spanish. And you're like, huh? Like that makes no sense to my brain.
Well, when did you feel comfortable that you could open up the whole playbook?
Probably the Kansas City game, you know. The second, third, fourth quarters, we started playing really, really well. Then from there on, we attacked and took that attack mode philosophy, and I think we were all on the same page from there on out.
The Bucks lost two straight games to the Rams and Chiefs heading into their bye weeks in week 13 last year. And our football power index gave them just a 10% chance to make the Super Bowl and a 5% chance to win it. But they came out of their bye firing on all cylinders, raking in the top five in efficiency, yards per game, and points per drive. They also shifted to a downfield attack, throwing the league's highest percentage of attempts for 20 or more air yards. So, Mina, when we go deeper into the stats, do you see a real turning point for the Bucs in the 2020 season?
Well, I think the stats tell a pretty clear picture. The bye week was definitive for them. You know, it wasn't just efficiency, yards per play. They were 19th before, first in the NFL after. And I also think this is an offense that improved as the season went along and actually peaked in the Super Bowl. And it was in that game that they really embraced a lot of the principles we wanted them to turn to all season, using more play action, throwing to their tight ends, more pre-snap motion to give Brady the indicators that he thrives off of. And that's what's so scary about this Bucs organization, man. Like, they peaked in the Super Bowl and everybody came back. If you're in the NFC or the NFL, that is horrifying. To me, the only thing that can really derail the Bucs offensively is if they were to suffer an injury on the offensive line. Because for Tom Brady, we saw, regardless of what point in the season you're talking about, with and without pressure, that's where things turned for Brady. When he was kept clean, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. When he was under pressure, his numbers dropped to the bottom. But if that offensive line is healthy, watch out.
See, Phil, Babyface, I thought I had converted my sister. I was waiting on her to say what I wanted her to say. You know what Tampa did, too? They ran the damn football. I'm on the Run the Football committee. And I will never be off of that committee. And that's what they did for Tom Brady as well. They started handing that football off and taking the pressure off the 43-year-old statue. Yes, I said statue, because Tom Brady ain't sidestepping nobody. The protection picked up. Teams had to worry about the run game between Jones and Leonard Fournette. And Fournette was the star of the game in the NFC Championship, closing things out, making big-time plays, big-time runs. He didn't go for 200 yards. It wasn't anything special, but the run game had its effect. And then we saw Tom Brady operate like we all expect Tom Brady to operate. That was the calling card for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
And Marcus, you talk about Tom Brady operating the way that we know and are used to seeing him. He talked about learning a new language, Spanish. Well, just add that to Tom Brady's list of accomplishments. He's now fluent in Spanish because he clearly picked up the offense very well as the season went on. And by the end of the season, he seemed to be rolling in that offense. And now you bring back, as Mina said, not just all the starters, but guess what, Mina? O.J. Howard also be healthy, too.
Oh, my goodness.
So you get added weapons on top of all the starters. Oh. And now Tampa Bay should be even more of a force. The issue is, again, now everybody is going to be gunning for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we haven't heard that sentence uttered since John Gruden was head coach, where everybody's gunning for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But that's what it's come to right now, with Tom Brady playing quarterback and that huge game against the New England Patriots looming the first Sunday night in October.
Yeah, Shefty, I'm glad you rose that. You raised that point, because one thing for Brady and Gronk, they've been the hunted for basically the entirety of their career. That's what happens when you win six Super Bowls before winning another one last year in Tampa. But Swaggy, does that concern you at all, the fact that every other player on this team is facing a different dynamic for the first time? All of a sudden, they got this bullseye on their back that's the size of their entire nameplate.
It's a different type of pressure, Phil, and I wish I could speak to it, because I never won a damn Super Bowl, but I know it's hard, and I know teams haven't repeated in a long time. So something changes, right? The dynamic changes, and obviously, because Tom Brady is the quarterback, we expect Tampa Bay to pick up right where they left off. But I think the most important thing in Tampa now is culture. And I don't think the culture is going to allow these guys not to play at a very high level. Defensively, usually we're ahead when the season starts. So you see a good defense, they're usually going to be good as the season goes. But even in early stages, that is when sometimes you are even more effective. Guys' legs are light. The injury bug hasn't hit you. Defensive linemen not complaining about putting pads on during the week yet. I full well expect the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to start fast. I hate that it's going to be against my Dallas Cowboys, but at the end of the day, this team has the right culture. You lose football games sometimes because of execution. I don't think Tampa will lose because of culture. It may just because a few plays didn't go their way.
Marcus, I can't believe you didn't say, well, Tampa won because of their defense, so why are we talking so much about the offense and the offense coming back and the offense being the... I'm actually really disappointed in you for not...
I was leaving it for you.
The defense is why they won the Super Bowl, and everyone on defense is coming back. So it's scary, man. What else can you say about Tampa? They are truly the hunting.
I'm trying to sign with them. I need a 10-day when the playoffs went right after the NFC Championship. I need a 10-day contract with Tampa. Come on, BA. I need to try to get a ring, man. I don't need to contribute. I just want the ring.
I think that's we could probably work on this, Swaggy. I think we have the juice around here to pull that kind of move off. By the way, the early lineup for that Patriots-Bucks game, 3.5-point favorites for Tampa Bay. So that should be one of the most anticipated games of the regular season.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back for more with Adam Schefter. And Adam, with some of the biggest quarterbacks around the NFL having some major question marks around their upcoming season, let's get right into it. We'll start in Dallas. What do we know about Dak Prescott's health?
Phil, Mike McCarthy, the Cowboys head coach, said this weekend that he didn't envision any problems with Dak Prescott being ready for the start of the regular season. So despite the fact that he got wheeled off last season with that serious injury, Dak is on track, working out hard, working out well, and looks like he's going to be ready to go for the season, if not sooner. That is very good news for the Dallas Cowboys. Meanwhile, we continue to wait for Aaron Rodgers. Now, keep in mind, the Packers have met with him on many occasions. Matt LaFleur, Mark Murphy, Brian Gutekunst, they've all taken their turns flying out to meet with him. Nothing's changed, and I think the hope would be at this point in time that as camp draws closer, that Rodgers misses his teammates, misses his coaches, misses some of the people he really does like and care about in Green Bay, and that's enough to soften his stance. But right now, everybody's waiting to see what Aaron Rodgers' next move is. And Russell Wilson, again, Pete Carroll has come out and said everything's fine there, everything's solved. No issues here, nothing to see, move on. And that is the case for now. Certainly that situation is quieted down. I don't think it's gone away in perpetuity. Like, that's it, everything is good and all live happily ever after. But right now, it's quiet, and that's all you could ask at this point in time. Field, Russell Wilson and the Seahawks getting ready to go to camp here in a couple of months.
Mina is smiling, perhaps a little bit carefully, but she is smiling right now. And one thing we do know is there may be a lot of overpaid quarterbacks in the NFL right now, but Russell Wilson, you could argue, is really not one of them. In fact, of the top seven highest cap hits at the position next season, only Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, and Ryan Tannehill ranked in the top 15 in total QBR last year. Russell Wilson has also won the most starts of any quarterback for their first 9 seasons in NFL history and thrown for the second most touchdowns behind only a guy who recently became a Broncos social media intern named Peyton Manning. All right, Samina, back to you as a somewhat joyous occasion. What message would reworking Russell Wilson's deal send to him and be for the franchise?
I think if Seattle were to restructure Wilson's deal, it would be about telling him, telling the franchise, telling the fan base, we are doing everything possible to create financial flexibility so that we can maximize your window now. Because as Carol said, it's not totally necessary. They've got years left on his deal. They had cap space. But sometimes it isn't about necessary. Sometimes it isn't about financial responsibility. I mean, look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yes, Tom Brady joined a roster that was already star-studded. But to me, they did everything possible this offseason to make sure it stayed star-studded. Restructuring deals, using cap gymnastics, adding void years, all kinds of funky stuff. And they're going to pay for it at some point. I mean, we're seeing that in New Orleans, right? Like, when you max out the credit card, there is a bill eventually. But if you're Seattle and you got Russell Wilson now, I would max out that credit card and do everything I can because, you know, financial responsibility, well, it doesn't feel as good as another Super Bowl ring.
Look, Mina is absolutely right. 33,000 total yards. The dude threw 267 touchdowns, All right, a career passer rating of 101. Russell Wilson don't need nothing. He don't need nothing but the Seattle Seahawks to say we're going to exhaust every opportunity we have to try to win you a Super Bowl, because that's where we stand now. Think about it. Been the two, lost one in a very catastrophic way. We're not going to visit that because Mina Kimes is one of my best friends. All right? But he is sitting there with one Super Bowl, like the other guy in Green Bay, one Super Bowl. And these guys, at some point, man, when you get the money, when you've had all of the accolades, Russell Wilson is an eight-time Pro Bowler. He's been on second team All-Pro. There's nothing for Russell Wilson to do as an individual outside of winning championships. All of those numbers, all of those things, I think at this point in his career matter. But more importantly, not leaving this league with one Super Bowl, i.e. Drew Brees, i.e. potentially Aaron Rodgers. Russell has to be thinking in that way in Seattle as well if they want to keep him happy.
Marcus, I'm so glad you brought up Green Bay, because as we try to unpack why is Aaron Rodgers upset or what did Tom Brady get that he didn't get, we focus so much on the roster and Jordan Love and the first-round wide receivers. I feel that, like Seattle, Green Bay didn't do everything possible in the present tense to maximize the roster. And I really think these quarterbacks, they are looking at Tom, and that is what they're envious of. The fact that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, again, from a roster construction standpoint, they said, we are going to do everything possible, exhaust every resource, do whatever we can do to these contracts to try to fit these guys in under the cap right now. And that's what Green Bay should have done, and it's what Seattle can still do.
Yeah, I think, Mina, that Russell has some Tom envy. I think Aaron Rodgers has got some Tom envy. I think these quarterbacks who have been in places for a long period of time see Tom go to a new place, help call the shots, win a Super Bowl, and they want to try some of that while living in the Florida sun and paying no state tax. And I think it's a situation where when they see that, you're talking about restructuring these contracts, whether it's Russell Wilson's or Aaron Rodgers. I want to see when Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers are willing to do contract extensions. Now, it may get to that eventually, and they may sign on for more years in their respective sites with their respective franchises. But if that happens, that's a big deal to me, if either one of these quarterbacks agrees to a contract extension, because that tells you that they're willing to get past some of the issues they've had with that franchise. They've moved past it, and they're willing to finish their careers where they are right now, which right now I'm not so sure about.
Yeah, look, as much as I know both of you said they looking at Tom, but I also want to interject, they looking at a lot of these young quarterbacks as well. And I know the contract situations are different, but look at Patrick Mahomes. Don't think that these guys don't have Patrick Mahomes in their sight as far as what Kansas City is doing to make sure not only he's protected, but to keep him surrounded with great players and things like that. Look what the Arizona Cardinals did for Kyler Murray from an offensive and defensive standpoint. These guys are looking around this league and saying, hey, these teams are positioning themselves not only to win Super Bowls, but to be better than us. And Russell Wilson has been in Seattle carrying a lot of the load as far as the success for that team, as well as Aaron Rodgers. And not only about Tom, but they're seeing young quarterbacks be catered to as well. And I have to think that has some influence on their mind going forward.
Quarterbacks, quarterbacks, and more quarterbacks. A story of the offseason. We still have another 4 months before the games actually begin. And the biggest move of Urban Meyer's young NFL career was a no-brainer, drafting Trevor Lawrence and that beautiful head of hair with the number one overall pick. But beyond that, Meyer has made some questionable decisions so far. He hired Chris Doyle as a director of sports performance, who was accused of making racist remarks and bullying players while at Iowa. Doyle resigned just days later. And last week, reports surfaced that the Jaguars are planning on signing Tim Tebow as a tight end. He hasn't played an NFL game since 2012. Then after drafting Trevor Lawrence, he selected his college running back, Travis Etienne, with a 25th overall pick. Over the weekend, Urban had some interesting comments about how his new playmaker will be utilized.
Right now we're focusing on the fundamentals of wide receiver play, learning the offense from wide receiver. And like I said, worst case scenario, you have a running back that's elite with receiver skills. Best case scenario, he's a legitimate dual threat guy.
You know, Marcus, I know you're often one to be short of opinions, but what do you make of this decision by Urban Meyer?
All right, so I spent the day. First of all, I got to have a meeting after this show because I'm the only one that didn't comment on Trevor Lawrence's hair. I wonder why. Okay, that's number one. All right, number two, let's get to this. Travis Etienne, number one, is a running back. Let me tell America that in case they didn't know. And I understand it. I had a visceral reaction to him playing wide receiver during minicamp, the rookie minicamp, because that's the time for guys to kind of get acclimated to their new surroundings at their new position. But when you think about this, I got further into thinking, and I left with a little bit of emotion to the side, and I said, if Urban Meyer plan is to use Travis Etienne in a similar way as Christian McCaffrey or Alvin Kamara or Tariq Cohen or David Johnson, this is genius. If he took a guy 25th that can give you this type of production out of the backfield, as well as be a pass catcher to create mismatches, this is a genius idea. This is one thing that I hope in the vein of Urban Meyer he's thinking, and that is what he's going to put into play. And based on his explanation just now, it seems like that's the level of thinking. Travis Etienne is dynamic out of the backfield. He's dynamic with the ball in his hands. And if you're creating ways to get him the ball more than just handoffs, it's genius. It's wonderful. I just had an issue with him playing wide receiver during minicamp. Like, hand the damn ball off to the man. Tell him, hey, we drafted you as a running back. Running backs already get a bad rep. They got Shefty and Mina and Babyface telling them that they value ain't worth it. You can find guys in the third round. Mel don't ever want to draft one in the first round. Let the guy play the position that he plays when he comes in the rookie minicamp, just so he can feel like, yes, I'm here. I've been here. I'm invited. They want me to do what I've been doing. Now, I'm going to drop the mic there because I know Mina is going to say some profound stuff.
Well, Marcus, it's not always true that you find a great running back in the third round. In Jacksonville's case, they found one who wasn't drafted, James Robinson, and that's why I was confused by the Travis Etienne pick. And look, I'm trying not to make too much of a mini camp, but I remain confused because after the draft, Urban Meyer talked about Etienne being a change of pace back, which seemed like an insane choice for a first-round draft pick. And also, by the way, Etienne, pass protection was not his strength in college. Now he's talking about him like he's a wide receiver, which raises the question, well, why didn't you draft Elijah Moore? Again, the jury is out until we actually see how he's used. And if there's one, I guess, through line of today's show, it's that you shouldn't trust coaches this time of year completely. But I still found the pick a little bit befuddling, and I'm very curious to see how Etienne is actually deployed in this offense.
Listen, this has become a passing league, and so they're looking to surround their new number one pick with the beautiful hair that he has with as many weapons as they possibly can. This is another weapon. And I think people forget how good and dominant James Robinson was last year. I mean, that guy was tremendous. And if he can continue to run like that, you got another weapon. Again, I got no issues with that. Urban Meyer knows a thing or two about offense. Let him pick the player. Let him deploy him. Let's see how it works out. Trevor Lawrence knows what he's getting in Travis Etienne. So, again, I'm going to trust in those guys until I see differently.
Maybe there's something to be said for how we started the show and how we're finishing it, right? We said, hey, Matt Nagy's words are
I know he better line up in that damn backfield. I know he better not try Travis Etienne out there as a slot receiver and try to sell me or Mina Kimes or Dan Orlovsky or Adam Schefter or Babyface Yates that Travis Etienne going to be a slot receiver when Rashad Bateman went two picks after that and Elijah Moore did that for 3 years in college. See, I'm back emotional because of Schefter. I bow out. Travis Etienne better be a damn running back.
Well, we have revved the engines enough, Swaggy, that I might as well ask you then. So you are, in some ways, the voice of the players on this show, right? You played in the league for a long time. Do you think there's a sales job that needs to take place from Urban Meyer, the offensive staff, to other teammates about, hey, here's why we're doing these sort of things, like trying Tim Tebow out at tight end, like trying Travis Etienne out at wide receiver potentially. Is that part of the dynamic in play?
Well, first of all, Babyface, he ain't selling a damn thing about Tim playing tight end. Them players ain't buying that just like the world ain't buying that. Now, when we get to Travis Etienne, yes, he can. If the plan is to use the guy as a true dual threat out of the backfield and at times spread him out. We've seen this, right? We put the graphic up of the guys that have been dynamic and tremendous. And the one thing about Travis Etienne, he is dynamic with the ball in his hands. And Urban Meyer has found ways and has done a good job in his coaching career of getting guys the ball that can make plays, short passes, figuring out ways to get them the rock and then allowing them to be athletes, as you see, as he was used in Clemson. But the bottom line is, he's a running back. And his success came out of the backfield, one of the most prolific guys to play the position in college football. So, yes, I get it. Dual threat helps your football team. Use him in that way, but he better line up in that backfield.
Yeah, he was pretty good at that running back thing. He scored more touchdowns in games than any other player in NCAA history. That seems like a pretty good stat to me.
And he ain't no damn tight end, babyface. ETN ain't no tight end either, so don't sell us that.
Travis Running Back ETN. That's his new middle name.